All right. Hello. Thank you for coming today. My name is Richard Gingrich. I'm going to be speaking on Packet Fence. First question, has anyone worked with Packet Fence before, really? Show of hands. Oh, good. We have one lonely soul out here, so I can now say whatever I want, I suppose, and we'll keep him quiet. That's right. You do have Google. And to clarify, like, if you actually read the bio on me, I'm not completely honest in the sense that if you do work for the state, you know, we don't have terms such as network administrator, and really I see myself more as a junior network admin. We have terms such as information technologists and the like. I'm actually a infrastructure specialist, but I'll move on from my comments on state job naming and go to an overview of what I'm going to be talking about. Basically, I'm going to give a little bit of an overview of what is network access control devices in and of themselves, for those of you who may not be familiar with it, and also the introduction of what Packet Fence is, different features, and also going into different problems that you might see and other types of access control scenarios and how Packet Fence comes up with different solutions for these, as well as different advanced features. And by advanced features, we also mean not as much documentation on, not necessarily perhaps that they're super advanced in and of themselves, and along with some comparisons. And what the comparisons really comes out on is at work. The whole reason why I really started looking into Packet Fence at all is because we were looking at another solution as what we currently have was going end of life here before too terrible long. So we're looking at what other solutions can we have that will go and actually do what we want to do and even more for us. So moving on, you know, general network access control is basically determining what kind of level access we want to grant any individual node that's entering our network, as opposed to, you know, just your typical, or like as far as wireless goes, just your WebP or WPA, whatever. That's more or less just granting you on the network and saying, have fun. As opposed to, we're going to look at each node individually, run a series of tests or filters, however we want to define it, and then based on that criteria that we've defined, put you into a special area or, yeah, basically whatever we want to define at that point. And one thing that you also run into is, do we just want to do a one-time, like an entrance check, and then grant you access based on that, or is it going to be a continual evaluation? Such as like network health, where let's say you turn off your firewall, then as soon as we get that notification, we're cutting your access, where it's or integration with an IDS, that type of thing, where it can evaluate you past your entrance to the network. I guess I just covered the health check, or partly. You can also run a health check as to does this computer have like antivirus installed? Is it up to date? I'll get into different methods of how Packet Fence goes on that, as well as intrusion detection and prevention. Is there worm spreading on the network? If there is, what can we do about that? How can we limit access to those? And which goes right along into, if we do find that, the quarantine, or our method of quarantining the bad behavior plays obviously a big role, as opposed to just notification. We actually want to isolate them from the rest of our users. So moving on to Packet Fence, it's first flexible in the sense that it can go anywhere from your coffee shop to like an enterprise environment, from what I say. It's not necessarily targeted just for, you know, 1,000 user organizations or higher or anything like that. But on the other hand, it's not just some SOHO application either necessarily, but it has the flexibility to be used in both instances. Also supports a wide range of devices. Actually, one of the latest versions of this just came out, I think a month or so ago, just released support for DDWRT devices, which I forget exactly the name of what it's going through with that. But now you can even install it on your, you know, little home router, and it will support more of the advanced features. Now, that being said, you can still use unmanaged devices. And I'll get into how they kind of work around that issue too later. And also like a phased rollout approach. It's not like you necessarily have to apply this throughout your entire organization. You can just say, you know, like this location specifically will be under packet fences control, and everything else can be going as it had been. It is released under the GPL. It's fully free free open source software. And Inverse is the company behind it. They're the people who are actively producing or developing it. Although, I mean, it obviously will take volunteers to help with it too. And the nice thing about it is Inverse does provide commercial support for it. They'll fully back it. And even on top of that, if you do find that you want a feature in it, you can say, hey, we want this feature. And if you pay them enough money, they will do that for you. So that is an option as well. It's administrated by a web interface. I put an asterisk by there because a lot of the basic stuff you can do from the web interface. Now, that being said, there's a lot, especially with the quote-unquote advanced features, you are diving into the command line quite a bit. So, I mean, it's not really something for somebody who's never touched Linux before, I would say at all. Officially blessed distributions to put it on is CentOS 6.x, Debian 7, or Ubuntu 12.0.4 long-term. So, I mean, it's known to work on others, but those are the officially blessed ones. Components, oh, that's fun. It messed up my picture. But in any case, so if you're looking up here, just as a general overview, this is taken straight from their documentation, which I will put in a plug for their documentation in a sense, that it's about 100 pages or so. Don't quote me on that. But they do have fairly involved documentation for that. It's more of some of the configuration that you'll find that you'll need some additional help other than just the official documentation with. But going into the different components of it, as far as the authentication sources, it'll take anything from OpenLDAP, AD, Novell. I mean, there's not a whole lot of documentation on Novell that I could find, really. And it can also do Radius as well. And we'll get into a lot how the authentications have changed, or the authentication structure. And really, especially, question, have you been using 4.0 or higher? Okay, gotcha. It's changed quite a bit, and especially in the latest version 4, it's the web. They completely redid the web interface, so it's matured quite a bit, really, as far as a professional look and feel to it. Then going on to the PacketFence core itself, it has Apache running your web interface, Snort, Nessus. Those are optional packages. You may or may not want to do that, depending on your network needs and what you want to do with it. Free Radius is definitely a core component of it if you are doing any of the like .1x authentication, anything like that. And then as far as your routers, it's fairly agnostic as far as what network devices that it'll support. I mean, granted, depending on what kinds you have, you're going to get limited support for whatever you're working with. But I mean, especially with Cisco, if you're going with that, and that's pretty much what I was testing everything on. It has really good support from what I could find as far as what you can do with it. All right, and then as far as if you were to create a fairly generic or fairly simple setup, what you'd want, it's mostly VLAN is how it defines your different zones and how it handles people or devices that come on. So you'd want a registration VLAN, and this would be taken care of more like a walled garden or captive portal, or devices who wouldn't have any other method of registration would gain access to the network. Great for like a guest environment, etc. Then you have your data or whatever your regular VLAN is for all your network traffic. Voice, I mean, obviously that's if you have VoIP phones. And then the basically the two that you'd really need to be adding to an existing one would be the registration, what I covered before, and your isolation VLAN. And that's where any nodes that fail to qualify would get sent, or if they're otherwise bad, get sent. And then, of course, your guest VLAN. And we'll get into roles and a little bit later, or actually next slide, I believe. But it's very much role-based, and think of roles more or less as groups. So when you're registering, it's determining which group it wants to assign it to, and then that's how it will interact with the different levels of control on it. Like I said here, dynamic ACLs are an option. It's not a very documented option, so you'll have to do, or at least not in the official documentation, so you'll have to play around with that a little bit, but it is an option depending on some of your network equipment as well, if they support that. And this slide, it was, once again, this comes straight from the official documentation. This is just kind of like an overview of just a very simple network. Any network segments in green would be like what would be on your existing network. The orange would be the registration, and the red would be isolation. So just it can also work across the LAN. So just throwing that one out there as well. But yeah, and you can have one in isolation. But yeah, it's just I don't know if it really tells us a whole lot just looking at that right now yet. But getting on to registration. So when your devices hit that captive portal, what they'll come into is the registration. Or we'll get into a little bit later how we can set auto registration as well. But the goal is to map the node to the to any role or group that we're going to have set for them before. Also with automatic registration, we can do that. It's basically if you authenticate, or there's different methods of authentication, but you can, based on your MAC address, if you're doing it that way, you can have automatic role association, especially like with VoIP phones. That's one way that they can get around doing that, or other devices that wouldn't necessarily be able to open up a browser. Then you have the CAP portal that'll support LDAP, Kerberos, email, Facebook, Google, and that's through OAuth and GitHub. Radius, of course. SMS, I put a star by that, because it's not actually, I mean, if you really want, you could probably build your own SMS server, but what it's doing is it's sending out an email to your carrier, like it has a database of carriers and what the email address, the proper address is to send to your phone. So that's how it kind of gets around that. Sends you a code, you get your code via text, punch it in, and that's how it works. Sponsors email, so you could make so people can only get on your network if send an email to somebody inside your corporation or whatever you want to call it. It's someone inside your domain, and they can say yes, let that guy through, and they'll actually do the registration for you. And then you'll get the code that way. Also, you can have local users as an internal database for that, and as well as a flat file. You can just, there's a file. If you really want to, you can edit that and go from there. Packet Fence is also a DNS server, and I should go back a little bit to the components side of things. Packet Fence does kind of take over various servers, and so all those are within the Packet Fence path, as opposed to just like a regular installation package. So it does work as a DNS server as far as registration isolation VLANs. That's basically where it's used if you really want. I suppose you could use it across your whole network. I wouldn't necessarily recommend that. But its primary focus is to act as black hole DNS in registration and your isolation. It also tracks user registration. So say Joe comes and registers on our network today. Next week when he comes back, it'll still remember him when he connects, so he doesn't have to go through that whole process again. But you can put time restrictions on, especially where I see this would be really helpful is in like a campus environment. So you start your semester and you can say all these students have like a 1 week grace window, or they can hop on the network automatically or without actually having to register. After that 1 week, it says, no, you have to register now. And then you specify what the end date is for that semester, and it'll automatically deregister everybody just to help kind of automate some of that stuff. And you can do that based on group, I believe, as well. Getting on to protected network access, and this would be like 802.1x or on the wired side, or WPA to enterprise on the wireless. Authentication sources, you can use AD. I mean, I imagine that's what probably a lot of people would be using in a corporate environment, at least. It's not exactly a horribly straightforward method of configuring that. This is especially one of these cases where you are diving into the command line quite a bit, and you're having to install Samba, Kerberos, and Winbind, and getting those to play nice. In the process, you're adding it to the domain, and that's how it's passing through authentication. Or you could skip all that and just use a flat file for authentication. And yeah, like I said, it's a bit involved with all the steps I have to go through on the command line to get that to work. But when it does work, it's nice. So on to the problems and solutions. Yeah, first of all, is one thing, like if you are doing wire or 802.1x or that type of thing, what happens with your printers or something like that, or devices that aren't smart enough to have a WPA or supplicant on there? You can do Mac authentication bypass, or MAB in Cisco world. And this is also for switches that wouldn't support that 802.1x pass-through. But it does stuff a little bit differently, and I like a little bit how it approaches the problem or this kind of authentication. Obviously, it uses the MAC address as your authentication source when you're registering. But also, it has a little bit of protection built in, some inherent, some stuff that you would be configuring otherwise. First of all, you could set up where only MAC addresses from a certain vendor are able to do this through your OUI database. But also, one really nice thing is it does DHCP's fingerprinting. So when this device is authenticating, it will not only check out the MAC address, obviously, but it will check the DHCP request. And like each request from different type of operating system, et cetera, would have its own separate fingerprint. So it can track that. So if someone was to spoof your MAC address, if they would be having something with a completely different DHCP fingerprint, it would then throw up a flag. So that's one method of protection. Then there's also I wouldn't necessarily call it protection, but by default it has a gaming rule within PacketFence. And what that is it would only, or it's a, it'd be a rule just for gaming devices, and it'll only allow, you know, like Xbox or PS3, etc., those kind of gaming devices or devices with that kind of MAC address, OUI, to even access that. And it sends it to a separate captive portal where basically they're only having to add a couple things or enter a couple things to gain access to it. Another thing that I really hated and cringed when I saw Cisco's initial approach at MAC authentication bypasses, how do we register all these devices? Like, let's say we have 300 printers. Do I really want to go and add 300 MAC addresses? No. So PacketFence has the ability to set a whole switch. Like, this would obviously have to be in a trusted environment. But you could say, take a switch and put it in a registration rule or registration mode. And what that does is any device that you would plug into this switch is automatically going to be registered. I mean, you can set different rules as far as what kind of rule that you want these devices to go into. But that highly automates the process of getting the devices on your network actually registered. And then, like I keep mentioning, there is auto registration where you can specify, you know, like if somebody authenticates using this username or is in this type of group or has this MAC address, a whole bunch of different different categories they can choose from will automatically get pushed into its whatever rule. But I guess for MAC authentication, that'd mostly just be based on the MAC address you can have, like for phones, especially. Moving on to the VoIP phone problem, is what happens when we have our VoIP phone with a PC connected into it, especially if we're using .1x. That's primarily what I was addressing here. Seeing how there's one switch port, and yet there's two devices attempting to authenticate to this. Here, especially CDP and or LLDP is your friend, and negotiating its own voice VLAN, and PacketFence will acknowledge that. Otherwise, if you don't have that option, there is port security that you can configure. I mean, obviously, if your switch supports that, and with that, just based on SNMP traps sent between your phone, or sorry, not your phone, your switch and PacketFence is how it would put that, that's in opposition to .1x. Obviously, if you're doing a .1x tunnel, it's gonna send all those attributes through radius when it's negotiating. And if you are doing .1x, that's when you'd use a multi-domain configuration, at least in Cisco world. And that's where it's gonna allow one device in a VLAN and or sorry, one device and the voice VLAN, and one device and whatever else that you want to put there. However, the voice is only negotiated via the vendor-specific attribute, not any tunneled attributes. Something to be aware of there. And if you have another switcher which doesn't really support either of those options, you can always do it via DHCP, kind of a roundabout method, I suppose. It works if that's your environment, but I wouldn't necessarily recommend that as the best thing to do. But you can set, your phone would get its own VLAN option in there, as well as, office registration. The next thing is different approaches to wireless access point or switches. First of all, being a rogue switch. What happens when Bob comes to work and decides, I want wireless network here, and plugs in his router that he just got off the shelf? How do we protect against that? I guess if you had .1x, that in itself would help. But if it otherwise, it does have a DHCP listener built into packet fence. And especially if you're having your IP forwarding set up all throughout your network, it'll get copied on that, and it can then put that or whatever the offending device is into isolation if you would so choose, or if that's how you have your network set up. As far as if you plug it, if someone plugs a switch in and you'd have, this is primarily in the .1x scenario, and you have five devices now trying to authenticate, things are not going to be pretty for any of them. And you can configure your switches and pack events really to see that and basically just block that at that point. Now, what happens when you have, or this is one of the scenarios that apparently somebody had, I guess. I wouldn't necessarily see this in a full production environment. But what happened, probably more in a smaller environment. What happens when you have a router that moves from one place to another? They call these floating network devices, or that they have support for them in the fact of floating network devices. And this only works with Cisco and Nortel switches, as far as the main switch that would be doing any authentication, anything like that. Not the little unmanaged switch that you're plugging in or the unmanaged access point. In any case, what it does is you define these floating network devices and by their MAC address. And so whenever the switch sees this, or whenever PacketFence sees that this device is connected, what it'll do is go back to that switch that the floating network device is connecting to and have it reconfigure the port that it's connected in. And it does that by basically disabling any port security that's on it, sets your the VLAN identifier, also sets it as a multi-VLAN trunk, and sets whatever VLANs that you have enabled or defined for this floating network device as well. Also for wireless controllers, it will play nice with wireless controllers. If you have those in the network. And I have Apple Profile Provisioning listed under that in the sense that it has the ability to recognize any Apple devices on your network. What you can do is send them to their own special captive portal where it will see whatever device or whatever access point that it's connecting to. And based on that, it can push out its own little, or create its own configuration file. So then as soon as they register, they'll just have a little download link. They can download that and they're on the network. Something nice for our Apple friends out there, I suppose. Then get on with the problem of unmanaged switches. So what if your environment only uses unmanaged switches? You don't have enough money or et cetera. They do have an inline mode and it is an option. So what happens is basically all your traffic would pass through your packet fence box. Obviously, you're going to see a higher load on your packet fence server. You're going to see a little bit more latency going through on any network or operations. And this any access control at this point, if you're using it in inline mode, would be via IP tables. And all of the devices are going to be on the same VLAN, which will open up its own set of risks. Going there, also have your single point of failure. Obviously, if that inline node goes down, then you are out. Am I too quiet? Just okay, cool. I just wasn't quite sure if I was speaking loud enough there. All right. Anyhow, going on to, obviously, yeah, you have higher overloads. It's non-routable, but you also have the hybrid option. Like that inline node could also be doing, you could have your environment set up where you do have some inline nodes and yet still like one regular packet bend server doing the typical operations there. It will also support routed networks, as I was going through before. You can have an interface in every VLAN, obviously. A lot of times your environment won't support that necessarily, in which case we have DHCP forwarders, and that helps our job quite a bit there. Where basically any DHCP request is going to be forwarded back to your packet fence server for processing. So when the server does get that request, how does it handle it? There's a couple different methods. The official method, it would be to have your isolation and registration VLAN, the routes advertised all throughout. The official method is when you define those remote networks within packet fence, which then automatically creates a static route on the packet fence box to those networks. And packet fence can provide DHCP services. Personally, I don't necessarily like that quite as well, so how I played with it in my environment was packet fence on a stick, where basically only have one interface actually connecting to your network. And you still have your other isolation registration VLAN. They're just not opened up. Or they're just VLANs that are local to the box. And then basically you're just propagating two static routes throughout your network to those two registration and isolation VLANs, because that's where the DNS servers that everyone has to reach if they're on either of those VLANs to actually have your capture portal and or isolation working in that case. And to do that, you do have to do a little bit of modification of the packet fence IP tables. And onto our quote-unquote advanced features. First of all, is compliance and or health scan. Very basic. If you're in a Windows environment, especially, you can do a statement of health through NPA, I believe, and just does a basic health check, checking if you're up to date, if you have. You can define what options you want to match on, but it's fairly basic as far as like antivirus, firewall, automatic updates, I believe, and a little bit more. And that's integrated with 802.1x. You can also do scanning, and with scanning, at Network Connect, and once you can define this, if someone connects on this specific network, you can scan. If they connect on this specific network, we don't care. But scanning is an option. That's through OpenVOS or Nessus specifically is what they support. And based on what they find on that scan, and you can also define scan lengths, because you don't want a scan just going for 10 minutes before someone can get on the network. So you can also limit how long it's going to scan. But then based on the results, you can place them into different categories or different roles if you feel so led. Through that, you're calling, or when you're scanning, you're calling a profile out on, especially with Nessus, is what I'm more familiar with. So you can even call specific profiles based on what network segment that you're on or that the node is connecting to. So if you say this is a very insecure portion, do a full scan of any nodes connecting here, as opposed to this is mostly secure, so we'll only scan for a couple different things here. Different ways that you can configure it. It's very configurable, as you're hearing me go through that. And also, the servers may be hosted remotely. I mean, especially if you have in a routed environment where you have one main packet bend server. Obviously, you don't want to be scanning across the LAN too terrible much. So you can have your servers local to wherever the nodes are or any coming on. Also, radius accounting. And this brings up an interesting feature that it also supports is the whole billing module. So if you wanted, you could use packet fence to resell your connection. Like, let's say you're in some kind of cafe or a coffee shop, and you wanted to sell internet, not only can you just have the option to sell it, but you can provide tiers for people. So you can say you get this level of bandwidth or a higher level of bandwidth. And bandwidth would also be not only streaming bandwidth, but also like a hard bandwidth limit. So once you've hit a certain cap, you could say, sorry, no more of this. And that doesn't necessarily apply specifically to billing. That's just in general. So if you had this open for a guest specifically, I guess also in general, you could see some use for that. But you can define rules based on your direction, like inbound traffic, outbound traffic, or total traffic. And you can set your limits based on how many bytes, how many kilobytes, megabytes, gigabytes in. Whoever has petabyte network throughput, you can do that. So, also, there's intervals of seconds through years. Hyphen somehow got translated into a box, so there you are. and that's optional. Obviously, you don't have to say how many. Through that, the interval is how long, or through a period of time, are we saying that they can only hit like 2 petabytes of network traffic? And also grace periods. If you're going to offer any kind of remediation, you kind of have to give them some grace period to get back onto the network, as opposed to, oh, you transmitted 5 kilobytes just loading the capture or the portal page saying that you can't get back on. So at that point, obviously, there's no way to remediate yourself. And yeah, you can set time limits, so like you can only come back in half an hour, an hour. You know, be creative. IPS, IDS, it supports Snort and Suricata. Whatever one is your particularly fun flavor of the day. Snort with, they also have official documentation. So we'll give PacketFence a hand for that on how to incorporate OinkMaster. If you're not familiar with OinkMaster, it's basically keeping Snort up to date with the definitions. And what this whole thing is, I mean, obviously with IDS, IPS, we're scanning our networks, looking for any kind of anomalies. And this is more what I was going back to in the beginning with the continual monitoring of the network with PacketFence, as opposed to just your one-time entrance. With this, you can scan for like peer-to-peer file sharing traffic, really any traffic that you want to match on. It's just, you're just matching a violation in Snort or Suricata with your PacketFence, and just using whatever flags that they're seeing there, you can put rules on it. Or you can, you know, block port scans or worms, etc. Sky's the limit here, so. and that brings up the isolation VLAN. I keep referencing it. I never really talk a whole lot about it. And once again, like the registration, PacketFence is going to be your DNS server. It's going to black hole everything but PacketFence. It's going to give you it can provide a violation specific remediation page. This is all based on the work that you want to put into it. I mean, preferably, you would have it where every violation has its own very specific remediation page. Like, this is exactly what you need to do to fix whatever problem that you just caused. Or you can just throw up a generic page that, sorry, you're not allowed. And it can also allow limited self-remediation, or it can allow full remediation, like based on the, once again, this is a lot of how much work do you want to put into it. You know, like based on how, what the violation is, or like if it's antivirus that's not installed or something like that, you can provide a link to where to get an antivirus program or something like that, or an update, etc., that type of thing. You can get creative with your violation pages and include all sorts of things to do before you can get self-remediated. And you can even take away the option of self-remediation, like, sorry, you're not allowed on at all anymore. And you can also, like, if you are allowing self-remediation, you can say, okay, you can only self-remediate 3 times before you get a nasty gram sent to our admin, and he'll come and have a chat with you, or something of that. And that brings up violations. PacketFence uses violations in a very general term, almost. And I kind of think it's a bit of a misnomer. I think more of detections. It's not all violations, things that are bad. Like, for example, auto registration would be a form of violation that you would set. So your violation in that case would be any device that has this type of MAC address is going to be auto-registered. And a violation is basically simply any event upon which an action will be taken, or can be taken, because you can disable violations and enable. And violations can also close other violations. So, I mean, it's a fairly simplistic approach that they have. It's not like you can create really complex violations. So they do have the option of one kind of closing another, or that's how they're able to link some violations to create a little bit more complex violations. And you also have priority levels. So let's say this node kicked off 5 violations. Which one do we process first? And that's where you can set priority on your violations themselves. And violations are essential to for the IDS, any compliance and health checks. Those are all, anything that they find, the report, or what they're going to report on, or back to PAC offense, is going to be done via a violation there. And reporting, all the violations are reported. And also each MAC address is tracked. So anytime someone would come onto your network or appear on your network, that MAC address is going to be tracked. And it's going to, like I said before with registration, it's going to keep track of a device if it comes back next week or whatever. And what it'll keep track of is obviously your MAC address. It's more or less your primary key. But also your username, whatever username that you last used to authenticate with, as well as what operating system that you're running. I mean, obviously, if it detects it correctly. The browser, what browser are you using? And it'll also show a log of your network access and location. I mean, particularly with your location, if you defined on your switches what their location is, it can help you a lot better with where that is, unless you really know exactly which each switch name is located. Like I said, depend a little bit on your switch naming conventions, but then there's also a real-time graph of your registered and unregistered nodes on the homepage. You can customize the landing page a little bit, but by default, it'll show a nice graph of unregistered versus registered nodes there as well. So you can see at a glance how many people are registering. And finally, I have a comparison from Cisco ICE, which was specifically what I was going with. And it's more or less an apples to oranges comparison, really, in some senses, just in the case that Cisco ICE, or Integrated Security Engine, or Services, I think, something like that, it's designed a lot more for large or to medium environments. And the first one, it does cost a lot. But that being said, nobody got fired for buying Cisco, which, yeah. Anyhow, I won't expound further on that one. But, yeah, just in the sense that PAC-Events also does have commercial support, and that's what some of the non-Linux-aware bosses may have a serious problem with any kind of free open source, is the level of support. But that is actually available with PacketFence, and that's one thing I really like about it, is that they back up their own program with that kind of support there too. And it gives them, or any management, just another little safety pillow, I guess, to lay their head upon at night. Like I said, ICE is targeted mostly at medium to large organizations, as also noticed by the price. But Cisco, one thing that Cisco differs with, or one thing that you can do with ICE, is they have the Cisco client that you can install. I see this as you can see it both as something good or bad, just in the sense that that's one less thing that PacketFence has to manage. It doesn't have to worry about all these clients being installed everywhere or the hassle of installing all the client software on all your nodes. But then again, client software that Cisco would offer can do quite a bit more information gathering on whatever device is trying to connect to the network. Like for example, I know Columbus State uses that type of environment where it runs a series of checks on your computer via the Cisco client before you can have any kind of access. Yeah, and with advanced posturing, Cisco really can drill down into better levels of how it wants to determine things about your device or whatever nodes are connecting. It can do that. Obviously, it's coming at a price, and it's not terribly simple with that either. So you're putting in quite a bit of time there. But just the awareness that it does actually go deeper than packet fence at times. Whether you would actually need that or not, yeah, that would obviously depend on your environment. But one thing that I found interesting was that the ICE actually does have what they call inline posture nodes, which is the same thing that I was talking about earlier with packet fence, where you can have a box inline, where it's just all your network traffic is going through that. So yeah, so they have the same thing there too. Moving on to learning curves. There are two separate learning curves, really, but they both really do have fairly high learning curves. Obviously, if you're really familiar with a lot of other Cisco devices or appliances, it's not going to be that hard. Whereas if you're really familiar with a whole bunch of other Linux stuff, packet fence really isn't going to be that terrible challenging. Then on the other side, if you get somebody completely new to this, it's going to be quite a big learning curve for them. But that goes both ways, really. And as far as a lot of network admins or who are just strictly network infrastructure may not be quite as familiar with the Linux side of things, I guess that would be one thing that would be potentially coming up there. Also, the appliance nature of the two devices. I would say packet fence is more of a hybrid a little bit. Once you have it up and running, you could have somebody manage it more or less as an appliance, but it definitely still has that server aspect to it that you really need to be keeping up on and on top of with it. As far as it's not like a really locked down appliance as opposed to like what Cisco ICE or Cisco NAC would be. With that, one thing I really like about open source things is it almost forces you to learn the technology behind it, as opposed to just how to run this specific appliance necessarily. But yeah, and that's pretty much all I had there. Now, seeing that I had a little bit more time, which I wasn't exactly expecting that I might, I will get into some of the helpful hints, I suppose I could say, about what I ran into when I was configuring things. The first thing is make sure that you actually do read the documentation. Also, if you're copying and pasting, make sure what you're copying and pasting from the documentation is actually what you are wanting to, because especially with the PDF, I've had knocked myself in the head several times when I realized that a hyphen got mixed up with something else or got completely erased, and when you're having a big configuration file, it's not necessarily that easy to see right away. Also, let's see, what else did I have here? Other things, yeah. Make sure that you get all your prerequisites installed and working first as well. And one big thing that I forgot about, they actually have in the documentation now, but remember to stop IP tables on first, right after installation. Otherwise, you will never see the configuration page, and you will wonder for hours why this stuff isn't working when everything is configured properly. But that's all I have right off the top of my head. So we can go right into questions if anyone has any questions. Now, this is rather a fast overview. Go ahead. Okay. As far as I know, basically what happens when you're adding any kind of switch, the first thing that you do is you tell it what the IP address of the, or typically what IP address it would be communicating with. And then the second drop-down box would be what model that it is. And then it has, based on that, it does its magic in the back end. It really does have quite a bit of support. And they also have a supplementary documentation page just based on network devices and how to configure all these devices. Once again, it's a fairly big documentation on that. Cisco, you're pretty much good if you're anything fairly recent as far as switches. But yeah, there is definitely HP, Procurve and whatnot thrown in there that I saw when I was going through. But yeah. Anybody else? Oh, yes.
Stupid question, but what advantages of this are going to give me over, say, a firewall?
It's really two different things that you're trying to accomplish with it. A firewall would mostly be when you're already on the network, I would say, as opposed to this is more or less what happens to new devices that are coming on. How do we treat any new devices that we're having? And that's really where I see the strengths of it. But yeah, I mean, it does have its own firewall properties built in a little bit, but yeah, especially like for small environments where you can't really justify a great firewall necessarily, like a coffee shop environment where we just want to allow access to people out there, but we want to have a nice little captive portal page where they'll see our logo and something nice and free and, you know, I don't know, stuff like that. Yeah. You had a question? Oh, you were just pointing that one out. Yes.
So you mentioned cutting off DNS, but you still have the IP addresses.
Yeah.
Contact, so how do you shut that off?
Or wait, with what?
How do you shut off full access to the network? How do you shut off DNS to a certain IP, but how do you shut down the actual port or some other method?
Are you talking like in isolation or registration type thing? Okay, basically, any of your network restrictions would be happening on the switch itself. So like for that VLAN, you would assign an ACL for that, saying that basically at that point you're telling any nodes in this ACL can only hit your management address, or well, if you're doing a packet fence on a stick, you say they can only hit the management address of the packet fence server. And then it'd have, yeah. If you are doing packet fence on a stick, basically you'd have it wouldn't be hit, or the DNS server would still be the registration or isolation interfaces or virtual interfaces on your server. Yeah, that's how it's accessing that, if that answers your question.
I mean, can you send SNMP to the managed switch and say, cut this board off?
Oh, okay. Let's see. I'm not quite. I believe they pretty much only handle it via an isolation VLAN. I don't know if you can actually say, chop this port completely.
If you killed the port completely, then nobody else would ever be able to get on that port because you need a mechanism to turn it back on. But
well,
if you get an isolation VLAN, it's like you're putting it on its own network that's not trusted, that can't see anything you care about.
Yeah, and that's another difference between Cisco ICE and PacketFence is how it handles nodes specifically. ICE does a lot with dynamic ACLs, where basically any device that it sees, it's going to push down a node-specific ACL to that port specifically, as opposed to using VLANs. You can use VLANs in ICE, but primarily what I saw, they're actually using ACLs pushed down to each switch or each switch port specifically. But yeah, and another thing, going back to what he was saying, depending on how you configure it, if it would shut down, you could also have, I believe you could get traps sent to you via SMP if it's a new device, or using port security at least. Or you could potentially just put it in a, yeah, that's one thing that you could do is just put it in a completely undefined VLAN, and that would be one way of complete isolation as opposed to shutting off the port. Just putting in a VLAN that absolutely nothing is in. It'd be poor man's isolation VLAN, I suppose you could do. But, yeah. Any other questions? Cool. Oh, go ahead. Oh, mm-hmm.
Situation we ran into is sort of a reason why roaming routers may be good. It's been virtualization on laptops. A lot of developers would be running like VirtualBox or something, so their machine would actually. We attempted just port security. And they fire up 3 or 4 VMs, and now there's 6 MAC addresses on one port.
Oh, right,
so,
yeah.
You know, port security would kill it.
Yeah. Right. Okay, yeah, that environment would make a lot more sense. In the documentation, they basically just said this is, you know, for switches.
This is our environment.
Yeah.
If you're different,
yeah. But then again, like, what we were looking at specifically is more or less just public areas that we were restricting, whereas, you know, your normal data areas, it's secure enough already. But, yeah. Yep. Any last questions? Cool. All right. Well, thank you.